90% of the managers interviewed said that the ability to speak well was very, very important. More important than the ability to write, okay, the ability to speak. So what's more important in the business world, your actual degree and your knowledge, or your ability to work with people? Bingo, it is. 85% of people are downsized because they can't work with somebody. They have the inability to associate and work, whether it be speaking or persuading or getting along with people. 85%. I mean, you think when you're managers, and I've been a manager before, and you look at the people that you need to downsize, you pick the people that people don't like, people can't get along with. You don't really look at the skills. Obviously, sometimes skills makes a difference, but it's how you get along with people, and that's what makes it so important. And so speaking is critical. You see it all over. You'll see training. You'll see speaking events all over the place that you will do. I've always been intrigued by speaking because there's nothing more exhilarating than getting up in front of an audience and just rocking their world. Now, it takes a while to get to that point. I used to think, well, I had some natural skills, I could get up and do it, but it takes a lot of effort to be able to do that. Again, 90% of the managers said the ability to speak well was very, very important. And there's 30 million business presentations that take place every day, and 40% of all adults, and I think it's much higher than this list, what is their number one fear? Public speaking. Okay. They fear public speaking more than dying. Right? You probably heard the joke before, people would rather be in the casket than actually giving the eulogy. I mean, when we're going to talk about fears and what it takes to overcome that, obviously, your goal as an audience, what I want you to be able to do, and you can write this down, is to educate, inspire, and entertain with passion, compassion, and purpose. That's all I want you to do. Shall I repeat that? Educate, inspire, and entertain with passion, compassion, and purpose. Let me ask you this. Do you think it's harder to speak publicly now than it was 20 years ago? Our attention spans, you know, it's the MTV generation, our attention spans are shorter. And so, you know, 20 years ago, you go to a class, you just listen. Now, you want to be entertained. Is that true? That's just how it is. And that's why it makes it a little more difficult to speak, because people want to be entertained. And they do want to make sure that you educate, of course, you want to learn something, inspire them, that you have compassion. What does compassion mean?
You care.
What happens as an audience when they feel that you really don't care about them? You're done. Someone gives up the talk and says, you know, I really didn't want to give this talk. I prepared it early this morning. I didn't want to be here. But let me try to talk to you anyway. What happens to you? How long do you give them before you turn off? You're sitting there listening to a speaker. How long till you decide if you're going to listen? How many seconds? Is it seconds or minutes? 30 seconds. You decide, you turn off, you're done. So, you know, and a lot of people think they want to be a public speaker, but it does require time and energy, and we're going to work on that. And some different things that we're going to work on as far as changing. First word what you need to learn is lolliophobia. Anybody want to take a guess, being in a public speaking class, what that is a fear of? Fear of public speaking. Now, are we born with this fear? Or is it learned? It's learned, definitely. You're only born with two fears. Two fears in life you're born with. What are they? I mean, a baby, a small baby. That one's the one that we learn later on. But there's two fears that a small baby, 1 week old, has. Fear of falling. I mean, if you were to drop a baby, that'll scare him. And loud noises. That's it. So, the question of the day is, if public speaking or lolliophobia is learned, it can be unlearned. Something that takes time. And that's one of the first things that we overcome in public speaking, is overcoming those fears, and we're going to talk about that. Now, 10 steps that we're going to work with public speaking, and you might want to write these down. I mean, the first that we're going to work with, and we do these in order, they're not necessarily in this order, but they're pretty close. The first step is that we overcome our nervousness and our uneasiness. That's the first thing that we need to overcome. I mean, that's the first step that we need to handle, we're going to talk about today, to take things to the next level. So, overcoming nervousness and uneasiness. The second is remembering what to say. Now, some people get so caught up about what they're going to say or forgetting something. You know, your audience never knows if you've forgotten something. Unless you say, you know, 1, 2, 4, you know, that's obvious. But, you know, people are so, oh, I forgot something, and they totally interrupt their speech. You as an audience don't know. Now, as an audience, are you rooting for the speaker? Do you want the speaker to do well? Why? Yeah, you're what are you sacrificing? What are you spending? You're either spending time or money to be there, or both, and you're rooting for the speaker. And so you're either like the speaker or feel sorry for the speaker. That's what it comes down to as you take a look at it. So people want you to succeed. Very few people in the world really want to see you blow it or pass out or faint. But for the most part, people are rooting for you. Okay, the third is correct body language. What is your body saying? What are you communicating? And we'll spend some time with that today. The fourth is inflection, tone, and pauses. Fifth is to customize your presentation. You know, a lot of your professional speakers have given the same talk hundreds of times, and people will ask, well, how do you customize it? And a lot of times they say they give the same potatoes but different gravy every time. If that makes sense. I mean, the same content, but they do customize it to their group. Six is how to read your audience. Again, we're starting to get up there as far as skills that will take time to learn. Knowing when your audience is bored, knowing when you need to shift gears, and a lot of rookie speakers make that mistake. They realize that they've totally lost their audience. And what is the rookie mistake at that point? They speed up. They read faster. They give up and they just read down instead of changing gears and getting their audience back. Seven is how to handle hecklers. You will be heckled. Again, it could be a crying baby. It could be a fire alarm. It could be a polka band next door. It could be a wedding. The real life experiences, things that could happen to you. You know, and handle yourself. I mean, you've seen political, you know, actually in the political arena, they actually send hecklers out, or professional people that heckle. Now, that's kind of a risky for them because that can make you break. If you handle a heckler well, that's a lot of points, isn't it? But if you blow it or get upset or get angry, because what does the heckler want you to do? Embarrass yourself and get upset and get angry. They want to see a reaction out of you. They like it when speakers sometimes do lame things, and then we all do lame things sometimes, and you have to just watch yourself when you're doing that and be prepared with good comebacks. And probably the worst thing that's ever happened to me is putting on a wireless mic, and a lot of times with wireless mics, you can travel with them, you're not wired down, and when you go to the restroom and flush with a wireless mic, sometimes it's for the old audience. You kind of walk in and everyone's looking at you, you know, something's up. That's kind of a bad thing. So watch that if you have ever a wireless mic to ever to do that. And I had a colleague once who was wearing one. He says, oh, did you see that lump there in his head? It kind of echoes as he walks in. Not a lot of points for that. So you really have to. The eighth is persuading the audience. Useless as a speaker if you can't get your audience to do something. You might be entertaining, you might be inspiring, but the bottom line is you want to get them to do something. Ninth is sending true emotion. Expressing emotion, having your audience feel emotions. And number 10 is your presence. What is presence? No, it is. It's a radiate. Your confidence could be a lot of things, but there's definite presence, and that's something that, you know, you work on later on. Obviously, the first one was nervousness and uneasiness, and that's the first thing to work. It takes a while to get to that point, but these are kind of the steps you take when you train public speakers to take things to the next level. Now, when you do speak, there's a lot of expectations when people pay you good money to come speak, and so you have to make sure that you do a good job. And some people think, well, I'm not going to pay you $10,000 to come speak. But is it really $10,000 an hour, or what does that $10,000 cover? Basically, what I'm getting at is to get to the point where you are getting paid that much, it has taken years and countless hours of preparation, practice, experience, and study to get to that point. That's true with a professional athlete. Oh, they're making millions of dollars a year, but they've been training their whole life, you know, with exercise and doing things right, so they're able to do that. And it's not that glamorous. In fact, do you want to know about my Delta Day from hell? Traveling's not a perfect program. Has anybody realized that yet? I've never been stuck in it. In fact, I've never had a perfect trip. There's either a delayed flight or something happens, or a lot of times the room's set up wrong. And one of the things that you teach new speakers that when you go to speak, to go to the spot that you're going to speak, there's something relaxing, reassuring, just to stand here, even if the classroom is empty, and just kind of visualize your speech. This is one of the things that you teach. But I was boarding a plane in Salt Lake City, going to Gainesville. Get on this plane, you know, this big old L-1011. They start firing up the engine, and the plane starts shaking, and there's this big boom! And the next thing you know, we're surrounded by fire trucks and there's smoke. Of course, the pilot's reassuring comes on and says, no need to panic, there's just a small engine fire in engine number 3. Okay. Anyway, so the fire trucks did their deal and they put out the fire, the small engine fire, and of course there's people screaming in the back saying that we're going to die, and it's just a big mess. Obviously this plane was going to take off, so they taxied back. And so I got on another flight. I needed to get route to Atlanta to get to Gainesville. But that flight has already taken off, so okay, now I'm going to go to Cincinnati first, then to Atlanta, then to Gainesville. So, of course, I got on that flight, and it was delayed, and I got there late, and I missed my flight to Atlanta. Got to Atlanta, and the last flight to Gainesville had already left. And I was doing an event where people were paying $3,000 a piece to be there. It was a three-day event, and I had a whole day. That was the first day. Okay, $3,000. And I need to get there. They've already paid me. It's a great thing about speaking, they already pay you. You make sure they pay you ahead of time. Now, sometimes they do it 50-50, but you make sure to speak with you ahead of time. That's okay. I will get on a flight to Tampa, and I'll just drive. Got into that flight, and the little blinking light wasn't working underneath the wing. They canceled the flight. Okay. I'm a patient guy, but I'm starting to get a little irked here. All right, so I grabbed the last flight to Orlando, and that got me in there about, it was about 3 a.m. in the morning. And then I started looking for my luggage. So I'm in a shorts and a t-shirt. My luggage is gone. So I rent a car and I drive through a storm. It was just a terrible storm. When I got there about 7 a.m. when I finally got there. No time to get a suit because registration stuff started at 7:30 and I was up at 8 a.m. No suit. Anyway, so then what I do, okay, so I take a shower, and of course a fun, refreshing feeling to put on your same clothes after your shower to do that. But as a speaker, I learned early on, you always carry your laptop and your overhead and your PowerPoint presentations with you, regardless. You always carry that with you. So, of course, I arrived, and there I am in my shorts and my t-shirt, and you know, you can feel the people judging you and thinking, oh, who is this guy? And now, once I explained it to it, what happened, they got a laugh about it. And but, you know, that just that initial thing. And then my luggage showed up about noon. And the fun thing was they said, oh, just leave your shorts on. And I just finished my presentation in my shorts. But the interesting note is I was mad. I fly this airline a lot. Over 100,000 miles a year, I fly this airline. So I was ready to politically correct way to say it, too. Anyway, I was ready to do something. So I called. I was upset, and so I actually did three things. I said, well, instead of calling, I'm going to write kind of a nasty professional letter. I said, look, I'm one of your best customers. This was, I mean, once or twice, but we're talking engine fire, three or four delays, lost luggage, lost credibility for me. And so I wrote a letter, and I sent it by email. I faxed it, and I sent it by regular mail, just to make sure, right? Now, here's the interesting thing. Here's the interesting thing. My first response was, Mr. Morrison, we appreciate your business, but, you know, there's nothing we can do. That's part of flying. Okay, a little salt in my wound. Second letter comes with a little package. Sorry, Mr. Morrison, we are really sorry that this happened. It shouldn't have happened to you, and here's the clock to remember us by. So now I have a Delta clock that reminds me how late I was that day. So whoever came up with that one needed to be shot. And then the third letter came and says, Mr. Morrison, we appreciate your business. You're a medallion member. We really appreciate that. Here's a $600 voucher for airfare. Now, I don't know which one was email, or I wish I could tell you which one was email, but that's a customer service lesson for you as far as something's not right, customer service department. But you wake up in hotel rooms and have to look at the phone book or call downstairs to find out what city you're in. It's kind of embarrassing, but, you know, that's just how it works sometimes. But it is a lot of fun, exciting to get out and speak in front of people. And so you really don't know. Now, when you speak with an audience, you know, you can usually tell whether you get a standing ovation or they just walk out without saying anything. So, but applause is always good to get. Standing ovations are even better to get. In some places, even use what they call standing applauders. They actually plant people to give you standing ovations. Have you seen this before? Siegfried and Roy. Ever been to a Broadway show in New York? You watch Siegfried and Roy, or these things, people come in at the very end and they'll sit at the end, and at the very end they'll all jump up and start clapping, and then what's everyone else do? Oh, that must have been good. You know, and they stand up and they start clapping themselves. So get your parents, your aunts, and your uncles to sit on the aisles, and when you're over they can get up and give you a standing ovation. So do remember that your audience does not want to be bored. They're not naturally hostile. In a lot of ways, speaking's a lot like football. To where, you know, you're starting at the 20-yard line. If you come out and you look professional, it's a lot of credibility. That's a 10-yard gain. But if you keep saying and you drool, 10-yard penalty. If you use great statistics and your great stories, you know, that's, so you're kind of going back and forth until you actually score a touchdown. But let's talk about this lolliphobia and this fear. Is this real in you? Is this something we need to overcome? Yeah. Okay, first of it's learned. We need to unlearn it. Let's analyze it. What are we scared of? Think about. You have to think about yourself. What's triggering this fear? Childhood experience? Peer pressure? Where's the fear coming from? Fear is usually comes from uncertainty and ignorance. That's where most fear comes from. If you are prepared, you shall not fear. So preparation's a big part of it. You have to know your stuff. A lot of these fears come from that you haven't been practicing your speech, you don't feel like you know your material. But let's go over some of the common fears that they've done some researches. These are some of those that we talked about. And again...
Sorry, what was the question?
Sorry. What percent of the time, just ballpark, when you have all these worries and you're scared to speak, does it actually happen? 72.3. I just made that up. I don't know, but most of the time...
Dang.
No, they don't happen. I'm saying they don't happen. They don't happen. See, I'm not communicating here. I'm having some problems. They don't happen. I mean, you think about it. Most of the time, they don't happen. We start worry. My definition for worry is negative goal setting. We start worry about, well, what if I do this? And what if I do this? What if I turn all blotchy? What if I start sweating profusely? What if I pee my pants? What if I vomit uncontrollably? You know? Now, the key thing to remember about fear and nervousness, I would say 99% of the time, the audience has no clue how nervous you are. Have you ever watched a speaker and did a great job? He said, hey, great job. Oh, I was so nervous, and you couldn't tell. Now, obviously, if you're losing bladder control or things like that, people will notice, okay? But for the most part, I'd say 99% of the time, people have no clue how nervous you are. Do you have butterflies? Do I get butterflies? If I'm in a new situation, a new setting, yeah, I will get butterflies, but the key is to get those butterflies to fly in formation. Transform that energy, that nervousness, into a great speech. I mean, it's okay. You just have to learn how to deal with it, and we'll talk about that. But make a horrible mistake, and sometimes you will. You know, I've been on stage with my fly down. You know, the person on the front row going like this is not a comforting thing. You will make mistakes. I have tripped on stage. I took a drink of water once. It was about 6 hours into an 8-hour presentation. Wrong pipe, sprayed the whole front row. You know, what do you do? Oh, okay, it's a splash zone. You know, you will make a mistake, and it's part of handling a heckler and learning just to laugh at yourself. And that's part of speaking. You know, how are you going to handle things when people come in? I remember I was in San Francisco or Santa Barbara, somewhere in California. I was given it's only about 50 or 60 people in the room. It's an all-day training, and this drop-dead gorgeous girl comes in a very skimpy bikini. That's all she's wearing. She's like, hi, can I come in and learn? Sure, there's a seat right there. You know, little things like that, you just have to be comfortable. What do you do when the fire alarm goes off? Now I'm going to get arrested one of these times because I usually have them just sit there and say it's probably a false alarm because it always is. Tell everyone burns up and dies, but fire alarm should go off, and so we're going to talk about these things. You are in charge. You're in control. If someone has a heart attack, who's in control? Who's in charge? The speaker? Yeah. It's just some things to think about. So this fear, the walk out, I'll forget what I have to say and I'll fall apart. I'll forget my notes. People won't like me. My voice will crack and squeak. They'll heckle and embarrass me. I'll bore them. I'll freeze. They've heard it all before. Here's this one. I'll vomit uncontrollably. Still haven't seen that one. I'll lose my temper and yell at them. I might be exposed as a fake. Okay? So, you know, public speaking is not necessarily that stressful. And again, the biggest thing is to be prepared to know your stuff. And we'll go through some things to do that. But it's unrealistic to please everyone. It's always been frustrating to me. I mean, you have an audience of, 500 people, and you're excited, and you can feel... Because sometimes you're really on, and sometimes you're off. Have you felt that before? You know, people come up to you, and, oh, that was great, one of the best speeches I've ever heard. I mean, it's changed my life. It's just awesome. And, I have 10 people do that, and one person says, I didn't learn anything. Right? And, of course, what do you focus on? The one person. All these people are loving it. You get a standing ovation. You're excited. And the one person says, I didn't learn anything. That's old stuff. He wasn't that good. Are people like that? Are people going to do that no matter how good you are? I mean, that's just how people are. People just love to tear you down, but it's hard. As a speaker, I mean, you're pouring out of your heart and soul. You're giving them everything you have, and someone says, he's not that good. It just really affects you. I mean, even if you have 50 people come up to you and send you emails and say, that's the greatest thing they ever heard, that one person's always going to be in the back of your mind. You have to realize, that's part of it. You're not going to be able to please everyone, and that's just part of coming over that fear. And learning to control the things that you want. And most people won't be that critical of your performance. They want to be entertained. They want to laugh. They want you to do a good job and stuff. So most of these fears are very unrealistic. They never occur. Stress is a mindset. And it's something that through preparation and through visualization, makes a big difference. They do happen, but I can't tell you don't be nervous, because guess what? You will be. It's just learning to handle those, getting those butterflies to fly in formation. That's what you want. How do you get your butterflies to fly in formation? So first thing, you have to understand what's happening. There's a set of physiological events that happen. You know, your heart rate goes up, you lose muscle tone, your temperature goes down, and your blood pressure goes down, and your adrenaline's released. And so your body's just getting hammered. All these things are happening to you. And every speaker goes through this for various levels. Again, 99% of the time, people have no clue how nervous you are. And if you can keep that in the back of your mind, so what if you're a little nervous? They can't tell. They don't know if you've forgotten something. They don't know these things that you think they know. And so that's important to realize. So you don't eliminate it, you control it. How are you going to control it when you feel that way? The hardest thing for a speaker to do, and it took me a long time to overcome this, is to rely on your brain. You get married to note cards. You write a talk. And you have it all written down just in case. Just in case. You know it well. You've been practicing. You know it well. But you bring your note cards up there just in case. Get a little nervous. You look down. What happens? You're done. What do you do the whole time? You just read it. So you have to be careful. You have to rely on your brain to remember the things that you're going to talk about. Critical, and it does take time. So most speakers, and you need to do, is to find a ritual. What are you going to do when you feel that nervousness? You know, what's Karl Malone do when he's shooting baskets? Saying something. Who knows what it is? But they all have these rituals. Some speakers, I'll mention the names, very, you know, highly paid speakers, travel around with an opera singer to wake them up in the morning. They have their own cook. You know, they have a back rub. Masseuse comes out with them before their things. You know, that's some people. Some people like to do yoga. Some people like to meditate. Some people drink too much alcohol. Very relaxing for people, from what they tell me. So they do that. So don't fight it. You know, use it as a positive influence. Use that energy in your speech. And it works out very, very well to find that ritual. Ritual could be anywhere from, I like to pace. I like to visualize. Again, that's a powerful thing. Even if you're laying in bed, to visualize yourself in front of the class. Visualize yourself in front of the audience, doing a great job. They're smiling, their attention, they're laughing at your jokes. Just to visualize it. Like preparation and visualization, if you can do those things. And I'm going to give you a lot of different techniques to be able to do that. And your key as a person is to be a student, not a follower. Some people think visualization's corny. Some people works like a charm. So you kind of pick and choose what works for you, because you do need to overcome this to become a great speaker. And the first thing you need to remember, of course, is never to plant a seed. Seed would be something like, oh, I know I'm going to be boring and you'll probably want to leave, but here I go. What does that seed do to you as an audience? Yeah, it sets you up. What are you thinking as an audience? Boring. Okay? You know, I was up all night. And, you know, I'm really tired. You know, most people don't need to know that. You know, I have a big zit on my, you know, maybe if it's that obvious, you can tell them about it. But, you know, I'm kind of gassy today or something. It's just not stuff that you tell people. You know, I'm not prepared. You know, whatever it is, don't plant the seed. I mean, it just drives me nuts to see people, you know, speaking and say, well, I didn't really want to be here. I didn't really prepare. Isn't that what it says to the audience? I don't care enough about you to prepare a speech. I am going to bore you for 30 minutes. Isn't that what it says? I mean, bottom line. I didn't care enough about you as an audience to prepare anything, so prepare to be bored. Does anybody disagree with me on that? Is that ethically, is that morally wrong to waste? Please. Okay, talk about it. So, and again, most people don't know that you're making mistakes, so let's talk about these things. Has anybody in the audience been throwing stuff at them? Okay, see, that doesn't happen. People are worried that people are going to throw things at them, or, you know, or tell them. That, I mean, they don't come up to you, really. They come up to you, oh, you should have stayed home. That was rotten. You know, that is probably the worst speech I've ever heard. You just don't get at this. And sometimes, as a professional level, you get that. But most people have compassion, even if you look a little bit nervous. So let me give you some solutions. Affirmations and visualizations. You need to spend some time to acknowledge what you actually fear. And then you ask yourself, is that really going to happen? And okay, if it does, so what? What am I going to do? I forget something. Okay, so what? You know, find a solution. If you're feeling out of control, what are you going to do? You're going to tell a story? You're going to change to a different form of speaking? Have your opening down pat, your first minute or whatever it is, so you don't even have to think about it. So you can get that rolling, you have a little success under your rear belt. And there's little things like dry mouth. A piece of candy or biting your tongue in your cheek will help that. Sometimes you sweat profusely. Sometimes you can help that, sometimes you can't. So careful not to clear your throat all the time. Do not drink ice water. That'll constrict your vocal cords, and you will not last as long. I notice when I'm giving long presentations, it has to be drinking like a hot herbal tea, like a lemon tea or something like that. That goes a long way. And of course, you want ice water because that's what we're used to as a society, but it'll really ruin your throat very fast when you're speaking. Learn to relax, control your nervousness, get to know the people. I put your mom in the front row. It's always good to see a familiar face. Again, being prepared, knowing your stuff is a huge, when you know what you're talking about. You know, and there's also books out there about, visualizing people in their underwear. Have you seen those books? Mm-hmm. Isn't there a Brady Bunch or something on that? Imagining people in their underwear or something, so they're kind of relaxed. Not that I recommend that. What I used to do when I started speaking is I would say, my thing was, they owe me money. It worked for me. All right, I don't want to do this underwear thing. A lot of people I don't want to see naked or in other underwear. But I said, they owe me money. And so that kind of got me in the mindset, all right, they owe me money. So I'd get up and give my speech. So, but I would visualize and I'd think and I'd pace and I'd think about what I was doing. And again, the introduction is going to make it. And realize that you're going to make mistakes. And that's not that big of a deal. Act confident, fake it till you make it. You ask, you think, what's the worst thing that can happen? They might laugh at you. Okay, might not be big of a deal. Learn to be yourself. Plenty of sleep makes a big difference. And, bonding with the audience. A lot of speakers will shake hands with people as they come in just to get to know them and to get that eye contact. Concentrate on that. Some do calming music. Some have a certain food and drink every time. Some do a map. Brisk walk helps just because you have all that adrenaline and it's just good to get rid of sometimes. Rehearsal and preparation is 75% of your success. Mental is a big part of this. Practicing, going through this in your mind. Getting ready to do that. And I'll go over later how I prepare for a speech. Now, one thing you learn to control nervousness and fear or awkward pauses or if you've forgotten something is what I call a crutch. If you're losing your audience, develop a crutch. A crutch for me could be a videotape that's applicable, obviously. A lot of times if I'm not sure where I'm going to go next, I'll take the chance to take a drink of water. Does the audience care if you get a drink of water? But that gives you some time. There's always a story or something that you have in the back here that always wins and can grab their attention again. It could be an overhead, it could be a model, it could be a presentation aid. A lot of different things. A crutch is just something that you do to kind of buy time, whether it's, looking at your notes, getting a drink of water, putting on a video, telling a story they don't know to work. And so they help. And also when things get out of control, don't make the mistake of speeding up. Slow down, think. Pause. Okay? And again, story works well here. Review your notes, drink water. All works very, very well. And take good care of your voice. Things that are very bad, coffee, alcohol. Never drink soda before you speak. Why? Obviously. You'll be burping. Guarantee you. Warm water with a little lemon or a little herbal tea beforehand. And people actually do voice exercises before they speak. When it's your bread and butter, you take good care of your voice. And it's something even kind of nasty when your throat hurts so bad, but you still have to speak. The industry standard is just kind of to chew on some aspirin. Nasty, but it'll numb everything down there. And you won't feel your voice for about, 45 minutes. But it is nasty. All right. Milk products are bad. Lemon's great. If you get dry mouth, Vaseline, some speakers put Vaseline on their teeth just so your lips don't, sometimes it's like, lips get stuck. People might think that's a little strange, but Vaseline. I've never had to do that, but talcum powder works well. If you're a sweater, carry a handkerchief. If your knees get wobbly, start walking around. If your heart's pounding, take a few breaths. Those are just a few things that'll help you out. You'll be thinking this week, what are my fears? What triggers my fears? How am I going to overcome my fears? It's okay to have. How am I going to take that fear and turn it into energy? Now, when I first was being trained to be a speaker, they made me stand without moving anything. I felt kind of like a doofus, but, you know, that's one thing you train, because most people are moving way too much. Now, your movements need to have a purpose. Your movements need to have a purpose. But there's other things that we do. What we're looking for are things that detract from your message, that we focus on. What are some things that people do or say that drive you nuts? Okay, ums, ers, ahs. We call those vocal fillers, top of the list. And most of you don't even know you have this habit. They're vocal fillers. Ums, ers, ahs, you knows. What are some other vocal fillers?
Like.
Anyways. Furthermore. Okay. What are some other nonverbal things or habits that drive me nuts?
Hair twirl.
Okay, the hair twirl. Okay, so we have the ums and the hair twirl. The hair twirl, what else can you do with your hair that drives us nuts? The flip on the ears. Over here, you also have the earring. There's the ring, the finger pull. We all know that you shouldn't be pulling your fingers. Okay, it's just a bad habit to have, okay? Pulling your fingers. There's the hand wash, the ringing, right? This thing. What does this do to the audience? Right? You're making you tense. What else? I mean, there could be too many movements with your with way you're speaking. What about rocking? Is a big one. Rocking or pacing. Pacing's bad. Now, movement's okay, but sometimes when you pace, it just kind of drives you batty because people start getting tense and they're wondering when you're going to stop. Now, if you're going to move and you feel yourself moving, plant. Okay, and if you need to move again, plant. It's when you don't plant and you just start going like this that we start getting tense and it really detracts your message. I mean, you've heard people speak before where the ums, you're just like going, you know, it's just like they're hitting you in the head with a hammer, like, oh, and that's what we're looking for, because if you get that, you'll never be a successful speaker because everyone's counting your ums or watching your pace or watching you move like a tree. What are some other bad ones?
Mumblers.
Mumblers?
Can't hear,
we need some volume. There's the fig leaf. Reverse fig leaf. Okay, not a good one. Okay, there's the hands in the pocket. Now, some people like it because, you know, hey, you know, feeling cool, jiggling the change, but stay away from it. No hands in the pocket. No hands in the pocket. But we want to see energy, of course. We don't want you to be monotone. We want as much eye contact as possible. Okay, leaning. Now, I'm different. I am anti-podium. Podium is evil. And you're like, well, I always speak behind a podium, but if you really want to learn to speak, you're getting out in front. It takes a little more effort. What's the problem with the podium? You're kind of hiding behind it, and you're attempting to lean, and the audience just, when you speak, you want to get out in front of an audience so they can feel you. Because then, I mean, can you feel the difference between when I'm doing this and versus being out front? I mean, the big difference. No enthusiasm, not having fun, going too long. But when you go too long, what does that tell me? You didn't practice, you're not prepared, and you don't like me. Right? All right, let's put a scenario in this. When you go to a meeting, and it's supposed to be done at 9 o'clock, and at 9 o'clock the speaker's still speaking, where is your mind?
Home.
You're done. Who is this person, politically correct, you know, and you don't want to leave, and you're stuck here, and they're going over, you're getting upset, aren't you? Clock says, you're done. Sit down. And going and going and going. I'm getting madder and madder, and they're going and being totally clueless. And so, in a lot of ways, isn't that rude to your audience? Now, they might say, well, I was told 15 minutes, so I'm going to take 15 minutes. But a true speaker, whatever you're prepared for, you speak. If it's 5 minutes, it's 5 minutes. You know what happens, and we do the same thing as an audience. I mean, that's your time. That's what we've given you. You go over. We don't like you. Well, I'm being kind of brutal, but I mean, isn't that what it comes down to? Have you had harsh feelings? I'm a stickler on that because it's professional. They give you an hour, you go an hour. They give you 2 hours, you go 2 hours. You have 50 minutes, you go 50 minutes, so that's what you do. Don't go over. Do I need to spend more time with that? Did you kind of get the picture? Okay. So we're also looking for a smile, good eye contact, volume, enthusiasm. Have some fun with this. And you'll feel awkward, and you'll feel kind of strange as we kind of mold you. You know, you exercise for the first time in 5 years, that little pain, but it's better to do that now. It's like, you know, some people learn to type with one finger, and once you get to college, that actually hinders you, even though you learn to type faster than everybody else. Does that make sense? That takes time. And remember, we all break the rules. You'll hear me say I'm an a few times, I mean, but the more you can master, the better you're going to become. And I'll show you a video some speakers that are getting $20,000 a pop, and you'll see the mistakes, but you know, everyone has their own style, but you want to get as many as you can. So, speed is a hard thing. The average person thinks about 150 words a minute, and our mind goes about 400 words a minute. So speed gives you enthusiasm and energy, but you need to make sure that you don't speak too fast the whole time, which sometimes I do tend to do. And I do have a lot of energy, and I do go very, very fast, and you have to be careful with that. And it also depends on your audience. I mean, if you're speaking in the South, anybody here from the South? You're from South Carolina? Dallas. Not so much in Dallas. A lot of times in the South, you will speak slower. Have you noticed in the South, they speak slower? Have you noticed that at all? I do when I speak in the South. I just slow down. California is a little more laid back. The East Coast is a lot faster. I mean, even we live in this great country, we're all very, very different. You know, in a melting pot, coming to all these different states, and we're all kind of different from different states. I mean, it took me a while to get used to New York City. Anybody here from New York City? You're from New York City? What part?
Queens.
Okay. Is New York a kind of unique place?
Love it.
It's great, isn't it? I love New York, too. But they're different people, right? There's no doubt about it. But when you speak in New York, it's a different beast. I mean, New York's about the only place you can use profanity. And it's public, I mean, most people, and I don't use profanity. In New York City, in California, I never do this. New York City's the only place, and I would say, that is a stupid question, and I'm not going to answer it. And they love you. Drew? You're like, yeah, I get it, you got it, right? You know, you're stupid, you know, the question, like, but get out of here. They're like, ooh, he's cool, you know, we like him. You know, don't try it anywhere else. I mean, that's just how it is. That's New York City, and they like it, you know, you're kicking, get out of here, kicking people out of the room, they just love you for it. Especially when they know you're from the West Coast, like, wimp, you know, he's from the West Coast. He doesn't know how New Yorkers, and they start going, yeah, get out of here, you know, they call people stupid or dumb, or say it's a lame question, or kick them out of the room. It's just a lot of fun. And it took me a while. It's true. It's true. Speed is one of those things. I do err on the side of going too fast. And sometimes I get cranky, especially when you're not used to grabbing it. But I'd rather go too fast than too slow, because when you go slow, it tends to just drive you nuts. And you start thinking about other things versus really getting into the meat of things and understanding where you're going and what you want to accomplish. Now, one was too fast, one was too slow, and does anybody know about the speech communications process? Well, let us talk about the speech communication process. And it is very important as far as learning how to speak and to look at the different areas. Let's talk about it. Seven elements. We'll go through all seven elements of the speech communication process. The first is the speaker. And it's not up here, but you have the speaker. They're the ones who present the message. That would be your credibility, your knowledge of your subjects, your preparation, your accent. Do accents matter? Do people judge you on your accent? Mm-hmm. Not that that's right, but you know, we say you should never judge anybody, but what do we always do? We judge. So what accents could negatively affect your message? The best thing to really take gauge is to listen to the national news reports, because to everybody they sound normal. Isn't that true? Does anybody notice an accent on a news reporter? Because they train and they speak in such a way where it sounds normal to everybody, whether you're in Alabama or New York City or California. Your enthusiasm, your trust, and that would also be your appearance. Now, I'm not going to judge you on your appearance in here, but of course, showing up in t-shirts in a short could hurt my credibility quite a bit. But what color is the best color to be dressed in? What, according to research, what color gives you the most credibility? Blue is a power color. Usually blue with something red. What about facial hair? I'm talking about the women. Okay. What about facial hair for men? Good or bad? Yeah, obviously, I guess it was a young crowd went to me, but for the most part, facial hair does what? Detracts, and then you lose credibility. You don't have as much credibility. You come with a goatee or any type of facial hair, you don't have as much credibility. What about being tan? Does that matter? I guess if you're overly tan, it might matter. What about too sexy for the men? Huh?
Distracting.
Very distracting. Do you lose credibility? You might enjoy it, but you lose credibility, right? So that's the speaker. The second one is the message. What is your goal as a speaker? Intended versus what you communicate. Nothing's worse than the speaker that bounces all over the place and you have no idea where they're going, what they're accomplishing, what they want you to do. I mean, that's the message. Most speeches here are too broad, you're trying to say too much. Pick one or two points and go with it. But most of the time people try to fit too much in too little time. So one or two areas, focus, it's better than being broad. That's also the message in your body language, the bad habits, facial expressions that you have. I mean, we're going to talk about nonverbals, little things like, you know, touching your face. What does that mean? Nonverbals, and this is, with nonverbal science, you look for what they call clusters, but usually when you touch your face, you're lying. Next is the channel. That's the means by which the message is communicated. Next you have is the listeners, those receiving the message. And there's two things that we never talk about in a general setting. The two things that usually offend people. Religion and politics. Well, race could do it too. Religions and politics, you have to be careful to only speak in the things that matter. Frame of reference, of course, values and attitudes. Great speakers are audience-centered, and we'll spend some time going with that. Okay, feedback. Feedback is what the message the audience is sending you. Are they tired? Are they sleeping? Are they bored? Are they yawning? Are they leaning forward? Are they listening? Are they laughing at your jokes? Are they shuffling their feet? Crossing their arms, they're taking notes, they're talking to somebody else. Now that's feedback. And you need to be able to read that with an audience and understand where you're going. Okay, next is interference. Now your interference can be either internal or external. What's internal interference? Thoughts, not concentrating, tired, breakup or a fight with a spouse or a boyfriend or girlfriend. Hunger, anybody hungry? Hungry? Does that affect your concentration?
Yeah.
A little bit? Toothache? Needing to burp? Upset stomach? And then, of course, there's the external. You know, the feedback or the interference. I've had a polka band next door. That's tough. I don't think I mentioned the event I did in Santa Barbara. It was a group of all men overlooking the beach in the summertime. Interference. One of my first big speeches I gave was at a chiropractor convention. And since I was the grunt, you got to speak during dinner. Now, what's more important? Your roast beef or the speaker? Right? Interference is also alcohol. Alcohol could be your best friend or your worst enemy. You know, when people tend to get a little tipsy, they'll laugh more at your jokes, but also it'll increase the heckling, so you need to be careful. And you should find out ahead of time, now, is the bar free or are they paying for it? Because that makes a big difference. Because when the corporation, when it's an open bar, woohoo! People go nuts, and that definitely affects what's happening. You have the attention hog, always asking questions. We're going to talk about how to deal with those. There's always someone in the audience looking for a flaw or misspelling or a grammar error. You know, there's a heckler and a lot of inference. I remember I was in, I think it was Illinois, somewhere in Illinois, and I was giving a presentation. It was only about an hour and a half, and it was a free presentation to promote another seminar. And this guy came in. And he reeked of urine. Bad. Very bad. And so everyone was coming free, and he sat in the back. And, you know, you don't want to be mean to people, but this would make your eyes water. I mean, that's how bad it was. It was smelly. Everyone's going, oh. What do you do? This guy's the whole, it's not like, oh, ignore it. You know, it's like when a kid has a messy pants. Sometimes you just can't ignore those things. It smells. Right? You know, what do you do? That's interference. Can you concentrate when your eyes are watering and your nose are going, well, first thing we did, I started speaking, and I didn't realize how bad it was, and then I finally made it, you know, you learn gestures to a support staff to, you know, you got to get rid of this guy, and so you kind of make a gesture. And the first thing they did is they went out and they got a towel and they poured disinfection on it and started flipping it around behind him where no one could see to try to get rid of the smell, and that didn't work. And then so finally somebody went up to him and said, can we speak to you outside for a second? There's someone that has a message for you. Someone else is out there for a message, and the message was, please leave. You're kind of, you know. I don't know what they told him. I wasn't there, but, you know, what do you do? I mean, that really affects the whole audience. That's not something you want to do. You don't want to hurt people's feelings, but there are some times and situations and smells that people can't really deal with, so be careful. A situation. That's number 7, right? Somebody counting? Number 7, the situation. Time and place. You know, how are you going to speak at a funeral? It's going to be different than a church setting, which is going to be different from speaking with colleagues to a difference to a convention, so that's going to be very different. Remember speaking to a group of mortuaries. They were, you know, and they pre-had sell mortuary plots. in part of my spiel, I was talking about the living dead and a few other things, and that didn't kind of go over very well. It's a mortuary, people. Some humor is not appropriate for funerals, and it, whether it be church settings. And so situations, the time and place is very important. You know, some jokes at a funeral, like I mentioned before, very, very different. Okay, so those are the seven. All right, you will at times need to compete with your environment, whether it be fatigue, hunger, again, alcohol, hormones if they're teenagers. Environmental, a lot of times you want to make sure that, well, let me tell you, what's the ideal temperature? 68. You want to err on too cold versus too hot, because too hot does what? Put you to sleep. So 68 degrees, and a lot of fresh air. You usually close the curtains and you have a lot of lighting. A lot of your professional speakers will actually wear makeup just because of the lighting. A lot of times you'll get uncomfortable seating you need to fix. You'll have malfunctioning microphones. And then you'll get little things like caterers trying to clean up before it's too soon. But then again, of course, customizing to your crowd. So watch the off-color jokes, know your audience, and never intentionally embarrass an audience member.